Oi, lads, did you miss out on the Jaren's Outpost Kickstarter and wish you weren't such a big doofus? Well, fear not. Late pledges are now open and they'll be open for a little while. So just head to Kickstarter, search for D&D's for Nerds or Jaren's Outpost and slam that late pledge button.
Hey everybody, I'm Jackson Bailey.
And I'm Joel Zammit.
And this is the first episode of the Jaren's Outpost development blog, which is going to be like a little accompaniment to the current remaster, the Jaren's Outpost remaster you're hearing. You're going to get an episode of this, you know, every week alongside an episode of that. Very exciting. And in this show, we're just going to talk about the board game that we're developing, because that is why we're releasing the Jaren's Outpost remaster. To promote the board game that we've been making for the last 6 years.
There is a reason why we're doing this.
We didn't just do it for no reason.
Honestly,
that wouldn't surprise. That would be very us, I have to admit. But
yes,
there is a reason, and that is that we've been making this board game, the Jaren's Outpost board game, for 10 million years, and we're extremely close. So we've decided, hey, wouldn't it be a gas if we did a sort of development blog to tell you about the board game, about the history of it, about what went into it, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a retrospective.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people, when they're making these sort of things, they'll like do it as they go along and those kind of things, and they kind of iron out those problems as they happen.
Yeah, and they write it down. They keep possibly a development blog so that you can look back and be like, what mistakes did I make? Yeah. Why did we make this change? Oh, that's right. We didn't do that.
No.
Instead, what we did is just nothing. I mean,
on the Jaren's Outpost
website, there are a couple of dev blogs that you wrote, but those are also retrospective.
They are retrospective. And there's also a few of them that are in draft that I'm just like, yep, I'll get to them.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I got babied pretty hard.
Yeah, oh, I think you were like, oh, we should do this. And I was like, that's a good idea. And I wrote one and then never sent it to you or anything. So, yeah, this is kind of retrospective, but it's still very valuable. And this first episode, we're just going to talk about what the hell is it, basically. Mm. Because, I mean, you know, again, like you hear Jaren's Outpost board game, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Shit, you know what I mean?
You did it like a tabletop RPG.
It is
Dungeons
it
and Dragons.
It is basically
the game.
A board game.
You could just kind of follow the notes or whatever. Do you have notes that I can use? That we could just kind of just run it myself.
Game. Yeah.
And we're like, well, I guess you could do it
we
as a table.
We could have done that.
Yeah, that would be clever.
Yeah.
But instead,
we made a full-on board game. Mm. I guess, like, the first thing, I suppose, is, like, why was this the decision we decided
to?
Because I honestly can't remember. My memory is that you came and you were like, wouldn't it be good to make a board game? And we were like, yeah.
So, a friend of ours who is a board game developer, Alex Winter, kind of reached out to us way back when. And was like, hey, I have this idea. He did a podcast. We've been on a few times. It was about board games. And if you could make, like, I think it was like a TV or a movie.
Oh, yeah, of course. I remember that show.
Yeah. So you make like a movie, like a board game out of a movie. What would that sort of board game be like?
Very cool.
And so he's made a few board games in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, hey, I've got this like idea sort of sitting here, sort of doing not much. Like, do you guys want to have a look at it?
Mm.
And maybe we can like, you know, reskin it, rebrand it or whatever, and maybe look at it as our sister show, Plumbing the Death Star.
Yeah, okay.
And kind of like do a board game like that. And it was like similar.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I drew it far out, man. What a blast from the past. I remember this now. We did, we got like... Not a...
Like a print and play.
Yeah, we got a print and play version. We were like, oh, maybe, but I don't know. There's, but then...
There'd be a lot of reskinning to do.
Yeah.
It was not quite like Cards Against Humanity. It was more about like... It was a similar vein, but a little bit more involved.
Very much like a party game.
Yeah, it was like a party game that it just didn't really feel like... I think it's going to be a very frustrating thing to say... In retrospect, but like reskinning that to fit what, you know, we do at Plumbing the Death Star, you know, seemed like a monumental challenge.
Yeah. So instead, it is so funny. Like, there's so many podcasts these days that do that. They make like a little party game out of the podcast. Mm. I've seen so many recently for some reason. And we were like, no, not that. Instead, we will make like an in-depth, crunchy, interesting, weird board game that is going to take like 6 to 7 years of our lives, you know?
I think part of it is because like what we play with board games is sort of like Rue and Scythe
and stuff like that.
And those kind of like, you know, Everdell, those kind of like involved, interesting sort of like strategic games.
Yeah, for sure.
So we were like, okay, yeah, we kind of want to do something like that.
I think what kind of happened to us a little bit is that, you know, most people, if you're a podcast, they're like, I'll make a board game. game or a party game, you're like, oh, that's like a fun piece of merch.
Mm.
But we were like, oh, I want to make a board game.
Yeah.
Which is like a kind of just like a different experience. It's not like making a fun bit of merch that like is, you know, just a bit of fun, whatever. We were like, oh, there's like a whole enterprise unto itself. But we didn't really realize that then, to be honest.
No.
And I remember that first initial meeting with Alex where he was like, What do you want to do? What do you want?
So we got the print and play version of this sort of party game that wasn't really quite.
No, it didn't quite gel.
And like even trying to like reskin it in terms of like what we do with plumbing was like, I don't know if we can make this work. But you know, we really had a good time with Jaren's Outpost, the campaign.
Yeah.
And there was like, well, there's like a lot of different multifaceted sort of factions, and you could do this, you could do that. So doing something like that sounds interesting, and we could kind of like board gamify that, because by and large, it is just a game, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I remember going and having a chat with Alex, and Alex was the first person to be like, okay, cool, so... He was the one, because he never really had played a lot of D&D, but he was like, okay, and I forget who he was basing this after, but it was about the pre-programmic movement that is still in this game.
It's kind of one of the core elements of the game, and obviously... It's very hard to explain a board game through audio or even video for those of you watching it on YouTube. I don't want to sit here and be like, right, so you get like 10 pieces. These are your NPC cards. You won't get it. But a crucial part of the game is that on the four turns that make up a round, see, it's already scary.
Yeah,
on the four turns that make up a round, you pre-program them before you play them. So you say, I'm going to go forward, and then on the next turn left, and then on the next turn right, and then on the next turn, you're doing a loop in this example.
Yeah.
And then everybody else does that as well, and you just see what's become of the game. I think that's one of the very unique parts of this game. Mm. I don't think, I've not played many other games that do something that's that sort of similar to that.
So, yeah, he was, I forget who was based on or which sort of game designer was making this. But yes, it was about like you pre-program your moveset and, you know, for us, we were like, all right, we'll break it down to like, you know, 7 days a week kind of thing.
Yeah.
And each day is broken down into like, you know, those four segments.
Yeah.
And so you program... Before the day starts, you program your day. You go like, you know, planning. You want to plan your beautiful day.
I want to go to
day.
We'll move forward to go to the shop and then go left to visit Knock Knock or whatever, you know.
And I'll steal some of this and I'll pick that up.
And then I can drop this off at Little O's apartment. Oh, what's that? I completed a quest.
Yes. And so it was like the pre-program sort of movement was kind of like, inbuilt from the start. And then it was like, oh, cool. So that was kind of like the core gameplay mechanic was that, all right, cool. You need to plan your perfect day and then... See what happens.
Absolutely.
Someone else is planning their perfect day. Someone else is planning their perfect day.
Mm.
And let's try
see
and
how those perfect days interact.
And so there was a bunch of playtesting with, you know, I guess, like placeholder images, like, you know, locations and all these type of things. And so Alex put together the first iteration, which there is like some photos of that on the Jaren's Outpost website of like the very, 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 very first iteration.
Such a different game.
And then after that, we hired, so Nathan Davis is our regular like artist for a lot of what we do at D&D is for Nerds and Sandspans Radio. He's done the majority of
the character designs and the stuff that like you know, when you think of Greg Pierce, you are thinking of Nathan's sort of interpretation of that.
He did the sort of, he's done like a lot of the art for that. He's done the front cover as well for the... game. And so we hired him to do more, say, some of the items and the like the layouts, the design and layouts as well. He's at the time because he went and got a very fancy job. Probably can't mention where he is working now. Maybe I don't know.
Who knows, dude?
I don't know.
Best not, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, he went on and he's done like, you know, bigger, better things. So it was like I didn't want to kind of inundate him with doing all the
character
designs.
Because I mean, it's a lot of art. It's a lot of art for something, especially for the game we made.
And so Ralph Atanasia or Ralph America, if you listen to I guess a few of our other shows on the network, he did all the character designs. And so it was like, we needed a bunch of different NPCs and we needed a bunch of different, playable characters. And a lot of the stuff we also didn't end up using, or like once it was done, we're like, actually, can you kind of redo this version?
I definitely feel like the way we sort of designed this board game, and in later episodes, we'll go into more detail about like the sort of more specific, you know, parts of designing a board game. But I just know that we did it ass backwards. I just know that if somebody who's been doing this for their career for, you know, their whole lives, found out how we made this board game, they would be like, why did you start there?
Oh, dude, I don't know. Oh, man.
Because we didn't know what we were doing.
Not that 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, since, you know, making this, like, going on and watching a bunch of different, like, you know, how to make a board game, or like how to play test a board game, or how to do this kind of stuff, and be like, that would have been clever.
Yeah. But also, in some weird way, I feel like we were, you know, like sort of unfettered by the ideas of what a board game should be. You know what I mean? I think in some way that it was oddly beneficial when it was beneficial, you know? And then I think, as we actually started to figure out what we were doing, then that was useful.
So that was the first iteration. And then, we got after getting the art done, and then there's a Spanish artist, Nuno, he did all the location art as well. And so, like, with that, you know, the idea of, like, you know, sharing the load in terms of, like, the different art that we needed was kind of, like, why we got, like, three different
artists. And we're so lucky as well that those three different artists, I think, have made something very cohesive. I think that it's really a risky in a situation like that you're going to be like, well, these look like they come from different board games. But they don't. And you know, everybody that's played it sort of has had the same sentiment that they're like, oh, it feels, because it is, like, a cohesive whole. But then I think this thing happened with making this board game where the initial design, we were like, we love the skeleton of this, but some stuff about it we want to change and we want to sort of adapt and then that began this very slow process of transforming that initial prototype, that like very basic prototype, into the current immeasurably playable game that we have today.
Because it was like, it went from that very, very first prototype with, placeholder imagery and everything like that, to then getting a very first prototype printed.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, it had like, I think it was rectangular locations instead of the current square where they're at.
Yeah.
They had all these like certain rules and like there were certain things that have definitely been like cut.
Oh, absolutely.
And I remember playing it, like we played it once because I remember Alex kind of came over and was like, here it is, look, play it as much as you want, you know, kind of work out what works, what doesn't. And like, you know, he did a really great job of those initial rules that you could kind of then, what we ended up like, you know, hanging a lot of what has become this game. And it was like, after playing it a few times, it was like, okay.
Yeah,
we have notes.
Absolutely,
and there's definitely some like, the skeleton, which is the movement set of like planning your movement.
Yeah.
Has remained all the way through.
Absolutely, it's remained extremely consistent. That one core, about that we've built on that, and we've sort of changed the way the game initially played. So, an extremely basic, like, I suppose, rundown of how the game works and what the aim is that, you pre-program your movement with the intention of completing as many quests as possible and defeating as many NPCs as possible, sort of, so that by the end of the game, by the end of the 7 days, you will have the most prestige points. But the sort of part of the kicker of that is that everybody's going for the same quests. So I think there's like a weird element of poker to it as well, where you will have more than one quest that you need to, you know, that is available to everybody every day. And so you're like, well, I'm pre-programming my movements, but is Zamet going for the same quest I am? Do I need to be wary of him? That kind of thing. But the initial version had, which I can see why Alex did this, but it had, like, you selected the quests and then you selected the NPCs and the items.
Yeah.
Because, I should say, most of the quests involve collecting an item and taking it to a location or collecting multiple items or visiting multiple NPCs. But yeah, the initial version was like, you pick the numbered NPCs that are going to be in this. You basically set up a scenario for yourself.
Yeah. There was this, because the I guess what you're playing on is the Jaren's Outpost City, which is made up of 25 location tiles. And with, you know, with on those location tiles, you have an NPC and an item.
Yes.
And the very first iteration was you just had those 25 items and those 25 NPCs and those 25 locations. And that was the playing field. But we'd also got like art that was a bit more than like just those 25 items, those 25 NPCs. And so when you got, you know, you had a bunch of missions that were all handed out, and then it was like, okay, cool. So you had to then find like whatever the missions that were there, you grab those correlating like NPCs and
items
from the, you know, the deck, and you put them into the game. And then once everyone's done that, you then add as many, you know, items and to make up 25, and as many
And it just was so many extra steps.
A lot of setup.
Yeah. Which is not, I mean, like, a lot of board games do have that level of setup, but I think we were just like, I don't know if I want to be doing
level of setup, because it wasn't just like setting up of like, all right, move these cards over here, making sure that the table is set up like this, grabbing, you know, this over here. It was like going through a deck and like removing,
being like, oh, well, I'm looking for, you know, because you would have the little quest card, and the quest would have, so every NPC and every item had a number on it, and the quest would have the numbers that you needed. So what that left you doing is like, you're like, what do I need? Oh, 227. And you'd be like, okay, 222, you're flicking through it. Oh, there's 227. There's 227. And it just kind of, you know, and that's like a thing. It's kind of cool that we immediately like clocked that as something we didn't want in the game, because I think so much of developing it is figuring out what's fun and what's not fun, and figuring out what is streamlined and quick and simple, and what is complex and maybe kind of unwieldy and sort of like kind of weighs down the game. And so I think that was the sort of beginning of like a, no, you know what, this is not quite what we want. But don't get me wrong, that, I mean, like, when was that? That would have been like, what, 20?
Let's call it 2018.
No, earlier than that. It would have been like 2017, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
So that was 2017, and then, you know, it took us until now before we're like, oh, we figured out the game.
Yeah, no, like, oh, it's been 6 years. No, it's been more than six years.
And I think part of the reason that it has taken so long, and we might do a whole episode on this later on, or who knows, but part of the reason is that it's never been our main focus, because unfortunately just couldn't be.
Yeah.
So that meant that piecemeal, we had to find the time amidst all of the other podcasts that we're recording and, you know, find the space to be like, we got to sit down and figure out this freaking
like
game.
In between, like, you know, doing UK tours, in between, you know, putting out podcasts, various many different ones.
Yeah.
And then, you know, COVID happened, which was like weirdly harder and easier in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because we were able to use a tabletop sim to be able to, like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
Let's import everything in and let's go.
Plus, you had a lot of time. Like, you know, you're like, what else am I doing? All right, let's figure it out.
But like the problem of tabletop sim was like, well, if you wanted to make changes and you can't really kind of make them on the fly, or like you really want that tech.
Oh, absolutely. Tactile. Like, even with the, you know, the game is complete now, and we're still playtesting stuff and, you know, figuring stuff out. But even with the complete game and tabletop sim perfectly working, still somehow I want to feel the cards. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's a funny thing.
Like,
yeah.
It's great that, like, you know, that exists and you can do it. You can do that with all these different kind of video, like, board games. But it's just, I don't know.
Maybe it's
just like I like board games. So you kind of want that ability to pick up a piece,
absolutely,
up, like the card, and have a look at it.
Yeah.
Rather than, what's the zoom button again?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, I'm lost. Like, somehow I've set my base ground is under the table. I do that so often. I don't know why. So it has been a slow development process, and I think part of that as well is that what happens is, you know, I remember there's a period. Was it like last year? No, the year before, maybe, where we were like, let's dedicate a month.
Yeah.
Let's dedicate a month to it, which was really valuable because we got a lot done, but we had to do a lot of work. To be like, all right, we need to have all these plumbings, all this D&D, all this baseless, all this thumb cramps, blah, 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 and all this done by this month so that we can go, basically, this is our full-time job for a bit.
Yeah. And there is also something I would say about, like, leaving it alone and having a think.
Because,
like, that's very useful valuable. To be like, yeah, this is a problem over here, or was that fun, or how can that be a bit better, a bit streamlined, or a bit interesting, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, being able to walk away and, like, you know, again, it's like have that shower thought.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Like, oh, that would be interesting.
Like, wouldn't that be something we could do?
Here? What if
we
included that there? And so those have been quite useful.
Yes, I agree. Like, it's a real, like, double-edged sword. I wanted to say coin. All coins are double-edged.
No, they're double-sided.
What is a side but an edge?
The coin will have three. Anyway.
But in that, you have that, there's that great, you get that distance from it. So then also when you come back and you start playing it and you're like, oh, this isn't fun. Like, I was too close to it. I couldn't realize. But also you come back and you're like, what was the problem that we were trying to fix last time? And then you play a game and you're like, oh, that's right. But you need to have that, like, the kind of period of getting into the game and figuring out what the hell you were focusing on last time, what still needs to be fixed, and stuff like that. So, in a way, it's a miracle we got here. But it's also...
Oh, and how.
It's spectacular that we did.
Yeah.
And I could not be more proud of, like, the final product.
It's really cool looking at this game and playing it and being like, wow, that it's fun to do.
Yeah.
Fun to play. And we did this. And it plays kind of like how we really wanted
it to. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is that, all right, cool. Like another thing that we did, which was maybe stupid, which was that when we had the player characters, we wanted each one to feel a little bit different.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because we're like, you know.
We were playing a lot of Root at the time.
Yeah.
And Root, for those who don't know, is an asymmetrical board game, which means that every player, every sort of player or character that you can pick plays completely differently to every other one. And we were kind of Root obsessed.
And
so when we started properly getting into it, we were like, could we make it so that every player feels different, like has and kind like, of a different vibe?
Yeah, and if you're adapting the campaign that we did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it was like, you know, Periwinkle is very different to Greg Pierce, who's very different to Leo.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, you know, they probably should feel. And so that was the kind of basis of like, you know, all right, like this character, you kind of break it down. What are they? Who are they? And kind of like, how can you gamify that in a board game?
Yeah, absolutely.
And go from there.
It's a very cool process, I think, of being like, right, okay, Greg Pierce. Greg Pierce, famously a slippery big cock deal. Okay, what have we got to work with? Well, we've got his movement, we've got his health, we've got his stats, and we've got his special ability. What, with these as our sort of like the framework, how do we make him feel different to every other sort of character? Which is a cool process, and it's cool to be restricted like that.
Yeah.
But it also means infinitely more work to make every character feel different
because you start
to balance
that.
Them all out.
Yeah, you're like, okay, is that powerful or is that... This was fun to play.
Yeah.
I'm always coming last.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that fun to play? Yeah. I am leaps and bounds ahead of everyone. I've lapped everybody.
Yeah,
So it's that kind of like balance, and there's like... For the longest time, and we can get into it in probably like when we go into character development, I guess, a bit more in depth. But like for so long, we just kept having this thing on our like Slack or whatever, which was the heading of like, what do you do with a problem like Knock Knock?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we just, it was
she
like the
was
last
just a
character.
Thorn in our side for so long.
It's like the last character of the original, like, you know, before we wanted to maybe look at expansion character, whatever, which was the last character we wanted to make.
We had to nail on.
And we wanted her to be a little bit more powerful. So we wanted her to be kind of beefy and like strong. And so she ended up being this tank.
Yeah.
And she ended up just decimating the board.
Yeah. Every single time she would win. And we, but because, you know, and again, this comes down to that like limited time to play because you know, it's not, it can never be, or at the time, it could never be our focus or whatever. You would be like, you'd play a game and Knock Knock would win and you'd be like, okay. Well, that makes it feel like she's overpowered, but we can't play enough games to know if that was just an outlier because the game does have quite a bit of RNG in terms of like NPC placement, item placement,
location placement.
There's like, you know, which obviously works, I think, to the benefit of the game because it means that every game feels completely different. But it also means that if you're doing a game with Knock Knock, you're like, was she just lucky?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was she just lucky? Because we made it the skill quite low.
Yeah.
But then, you know, these points that person got, like, they just got a lucky roll.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, that, they probably wouldn't have got that many points.
I definitely remember one game we did where Dusha was helping us play test, and he, as Knock Knock, was like, I'm just going to stay in this corner and fight people.
Yeah.
And we were like,
okay.
All right. And I think he didn't win, but he came second.
No, he lost.
The game lost.
Quite lost.
Well, then that's extremely Well, that's the kind of thing where
you're
like, well, does that mean Knock Knock's okay, or is Dusha a bad player? Was he unlucky? Was it because he decided to focus all of his attention in this corner?
Yeah, and then that's another thing as well.
Who knows?
Like with, when you're playtesting with a group of friends, and usually it's like, you know, me, you, and Adam.
Yeah.
Was basically like the
we were the core. The core we developed
just,
it really.
You know, constantly playtesting. It's just the three of us. So we got very good at three play games.
Yeah.
And then you do like, you know, four players and five player games occasionally. And sometimes we used to do the two of us.
Yeah.
And so it was like between the three of us, there is a different way of playing a game. There's a different level of like how we approach it.
Oh, absolutely.
And that also kind of like plays into it because it's like, are we developing a game for like, you know, people who are like my brain, who's like, I like strategy. I like doing this. I want to plan ahead. And if I can do like six things in one turn, I'm a happy boy.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like that kind of like, you know, all right, so I grab like Magic the Gathering. It's like, okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
On this turn, I'm going to tap one my planes, which will let me play this card, which then gives me two chips
absolutely.
Over here.
You have
and
eight
then,
turns in one,
I like doing
which you
that
do in Jared's
and I, it's fun to do.
I move here, and because I have the coffee in my backpack, I get another move. And what's that? I've landed on Kevin's table, so that's another move. And you're like, well, why play?
Yeah.
Whereas I'm almost the exact opposite, where I think somebody pointed this out when we used to do Board on a Friday, the Twitch stream where we would play board games, where they were like, when Jackson starts playing a board game, you can see his brain switch off, which is true. I don't have board game brain, but I genuinely believe that it's crucial to have a player like me developing the board game.
Yeah.
I think in a weird way, that's really valuable because I get bored easily, confused easily, and I'll want to do something stupid because I think it's funny.
Yes.
And those are the things that, like, that gives me joy in a board game. So I want that the game to have that too.
Like, those are
because
things
there are a million players like me.
Yes.
And I love board games, but I don't have board game brain. Yeah. So the game's got to be for someone like me as well. And then Adam's somewhere kind of in the middle, I think, of the two of us.
Yeah.
You know?
So I like it because, again, like, what I like about this game is that there is this kind of, like, almost that emergent storytelling.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Happen if you sort of, like, you know, if you know the story of Jaren's Outpost, you know the sort of the characters, but also if you don't,
so yeah, absolutely,
kind of fun to see what happens.
There are, like, games, and this is something that I think is rare in other board games, but there are, I mean, it's, you know, some board games do have it, but there are games, some board games do have it, like some others do have them. Anyway, did I have a coffee before doing this? I don't know. Did it just kick in then? I had spaghetti before doing this. No, so is that there are games we reminisce about.
Yes.
There are games that had, like, enough narrative to them just through the sort of emergent RNG gameplay that were like, remember that time? Or, like, you know, remember when Adam did this and pulled this move out of there? And even when we've playtested it with people, we playtested it at a Fortress in Melbourne a while back last year. And games that happened there, we were like, that's what an awesome story. That's just so the way people... You know, we're screwing each other over and trying to get ahead and stuff. Like, I think that's awesome. I think that's such a cool thing we've managed to do.
We played Ticket to Ride?
Yeah, Ticket to Ride Legacy
version.
Yeah.
And again, it's like a legacy game. It was a very fun
experience. Yeah, I had a great time.
Like, you came dead last.
Yeah.
We figured it out that if you hadn't played...
I did really badly.
Like, yeah. if you didn't play at all, like the random fifth person who just didn't turn up to any game, so they just take the base average, would have beat you.
Yes.
But there were those moments where you're like, I'm going to, for this year, instead of doing, I'm going to go and hunt for treasure.
Yeah, because the way Ticket to Ride Legacy works is that every game, the winner gets to pick a new part of America to expand into and build your trains into. And one of them was the Sierra... Madre? And I was like, bro, I'm getting that treasure. I'm ignoring whatever shit we unlocked this year, and I'm getting that treasure. And every time it came to my turn, they were like, "What? Well, we know what you're going to do." And did I get the treasure? No, but I had a whale.
Exactly. You got it once.
And it was not...
And how sweet it was.
But it felt good. The victory points didn't matter. It was a moral victory. And it was great. Yeah. It felt amazing.
And so it's like, so you having, like, with players who play like that.
Yeah.
Where they're not really disrupting the game.
No.
Because you also do get players, like, who will disrupt games.
Yeah, of course.
And, like, I think, again, Ticket to Ride is a good example of that. To be like, if you want to ruin your friend's day, make sure you get this line, this line, this line, because that just kind of upsets everybody. You don't need these ones to win.
No, but it'll wreck everyone else's life.
So there are definitely people out there who like that as a disrupting kind of thing. But there are also people out there who are like, I am a bit of a chaos merchant.
Yeah.
And maybe I will inadvertently, like, screw you over partly because I'm having a fun time.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, you are definitely that to a T.
Hey, I'm that, but also, there's quite a few games. I think you have just such great board game brain that you win 99% of the games. But I've come second plenty.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I think that's amazing as well, that I can come into this game with my wretched board game brain and still be competitive.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
like,
I think half that stuff is like, there is, like, this RNG.
And also because every character is different, you just find the one that you like playing as.
Yeah.
And, you know, you develop different strategies or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I really like about it is that every character can do everything.
Mm.
So, like, the I guess, like, to pare it really down, is like the way you get those victory points is by completing quests and defeating notable NPCs that are worth prestige. And those are the two core ways to gain that prestige. And all those... quests you can, like, pick up, and basically you deliver something or you're either delivering an item, you're delivering a person or you are going to a certain location or sometimes you are defeating people and, like, you know, whatever it is, and every single character can do it all. It's just there are certain characters that are better at doing the moving on the board.
Yes,
there are certain characters who are built towards defeating people.
Mm.
There are certain characters who are better suited at just like, you know, being able to churn through items and NPCs.
Well, absolutely. And I think part of that is, so for example, and again, it's hard to explain a board game through just audio, but so defeating the surgeon, people will remember the surgeon from the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That's an NPC in the game that's worth prestige because they're notable and they've got the highest sort of damage output and health, I think, in the game, or at least equal to someone else. But anyway, so if you're saying parry or knock knock, you've got a good base damage, so you can go in there and you got a good health.
Mm.
You could go in there and just wail on them. Whatever, you're probably going to, you know, if you're lucky, you might be able to take him out just like that. Mm. We've balanced it so that you probably need to pick up some weapons to do it.
Mm.
But if you're Leo, Leo's very good at picking up items, and some items you can discard to do damage. So you can, you can be competitive no matter what. You know, Leo could theoretically pick up a bunch of daggers, and you've done this before, roll in using your very sneaky movement, throw all of your daggers at the surgeon to do enough damage to defeat him, and then fuck off out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So that you've done the same thing. So yeah, every quest is very doable, and we've tried to make it doable for every NPC, but every player character, but you know, they are weighted.
Yeah, and I like what you can do there is that you can really tailor it to what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because the quests, they are visible for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it works is that it's the amount of players that are on at the table plus one.
Mm-hmm.
So for a 3-player game, Four quests.
So
the four quests are always there, and the moment that quest is done, another one takes its place. And we've got a lot of quests.
Mm.
So like the ability to kind of like, you know, play this game again and again to sort of get different quests, it's
going
to be very different. So it's always very fun, I find it, is like depending what character I'm playing, because each one is very different, to be like, okay, what are the quests? How can I do them? And is that worth doing? Or should I just go barbarian mode and maybe just pick up some
really
big items and just kind of go ham on whoever is on the board that's worth some prestige? And it's like, okay, cool. Well, I can possibly get this one, like that quest done, but I have to work for it.
Mm.
I got to go all in. And so you end up like, you know, spending like some of your turns going like, right, I got to grab this.
Yeah, I'm going to need this item. That's over there.
That location. Well, if I pass like, it's like a skill check then that's great because that means I can do X, Y, and Z. And then I'm all in and I get that victory point because if I get that means he doesn't get that.
Yeah.
Which means I get it, stopping them, and I move up. Yes.
Absolutely.
And then the next time, you know, you do that or you try and do that and it's either like you succeed and you're like, yeah, okay, now I'm down to like 3 health.
Yeah, exactly. I'm halfway across the board. All the other quests are on the other side. I got to make it over there. Or you get the almost the exact opposite of that. And this is always good where the new quest comes out and it's something like drop Papa Little O off at the Little O Estate. And you're like, where am I currently? Oh, I'm on the Little O Estate. Oh, who else is here? Oh, Papa Little O. In one turn, I can complete this quest that took somebody else, you know, multiple times.
You're like, hey, buddy, like, look, you're right here.
Absolutely.
Why don't you have a seat?
And then also, you know, part of the game, and we will go into this more in a future episode, part of the game is we wanted that sort of backstabby, screw each other over vibe that the Jaren's Outpost campaign has.
Mm.
And that was a really difficult thing to balance. And again, we will talk about sort of finding the fine line between fun and annoying.
Is this fun or are you being a dick? And are you making this fun for us?
Yeah, exactly. that when I said that there was a story that came out of doing it at Fortress, that story involved an item which is called the Rock of Whoops, which will make somebody fail a roll. And one player had figured out a strategy to just basically continue. They were just lucky enough the RNG worked in their favor. They could just continually pick it up and fuck over their friend. And their friend, it's that fine line. But I think it was incredible just to watch him be like, I'm not going to win because he was losing, but I can make sure your last turn sucks.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going to win, but you're not going to win by a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And
so
they
were like on this location, which means you can just like, you know, go through the item deck and grab an item. And so, every time we'd be like, all right, Rock of Whoops, roll for it.
Yeah, I got it.
Great. All right, buddy, what are you doing?
Do you roll to try and complete that quest?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, Rock of Whoops. Oh, okay. On your next turn, you can do it. What are you doing your turn? I'm going to search the item deck for the Rock of Whoops. Oh, you passed my skill check. I get it again. It was so funny to watch.
Yeah.
But again, that's that fine line. And some people, you know, they don't love necessarily that kind of, you know, again, it's a fine line. But in terms of victory points, in terms of, you know, part of it is screwing each other over and snaking that quest out from underneath somebody and leaving them high and dry. And they've got to now sort of think on their feet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of improvising and a lot of, you know, yeah, kind of dealing with the blows that you're dealt and trying to come up with new strategies, which again feels very much like, I think, the campaign that it's all based off.
Yeah,
I think it worked out.
I do like that ability because, like, when we first the quest initially, it was you either like just had them, right? So it was like, it was kind of like, after you kind of got everyone to, like, you know, all the numbers in a row of, like, yeah, who's in what, and put them all out. The quests were dealt out, but they were, like, a private thing, and they were only for one person. And so it was this kind of a thing of, like, I have this quest, you have this quest, Adam has that quest, and then let's just see what happens. Mm. And there wasn't that much interaction.
No.
And it was a lot of fun. But it felt very much like we are playing a single player game and my two friends are
just
also
happened
here.
To be here, yeah.
So then we were like, okay, how do we do this? Well, okay, what if it was, say, like, you know, you share your quest with the person to your right.
Yeah, that's right.
And so
yeah.
It was like, okay, cool. So then it was like, well, me and Adam share a quest.
Yeah.
Me and Jackson share a quest. And they
share a quest with Adam, yeah.
But, you know, it's just like, okay, that's kind of nice. Let's try that out. And that sort of worked for, like, a three-player game. But then when we're like, okay, try with a four-player game. It's like, okay, well, I'm never interacting with
the person opposite me, I'm just not.
I'm like, you don't worry about it. Right?
Yeah, you're like,
and so we're like, okay. And then we're like, well, what if, screw it. Everyone can share the quest. Yeah. Let's make this mad, like this madcap, to be like, okay, everyone needs to like a scramble to get it, and then that kind of really is like,
oh, that clicked. And there's so many moments like that. So many, screw it. What if this is how we did it?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my god,
much.
This
better.
Is how we should have been doing it the whole time.
Mm.
Yeah, because that's like, you know, I said at the earlier on. There's like an element of like not poker really, but of reading the other players and knowing what the kinds of people they are and the skills they have, and being like, well, this is like a quest where you have to defeat like a high powered enemy. And I know that, you know, Zam is playing Knock Knock, so he's probably going to go for it. So maybe I avoid it, or maybe I try and screw Zam it over so he can't get to it in time.
Yeah.
But all of this was such a learning curve to figure out that that's what the board game was.
Yeah.
Which is such a funny thing. But that really is how it works.
Because, like, I could go in there and quickly snake the quest so I could, like, do like the final killing blow or the defeating blow. And then I get the points and they did all the work. But I got to get the victory.
Yeah, I came in at the last second.
Or, like, just quickly, like, you know, pick them up and throw them somewhere else because you're like, well, if I can't take it, you can't either. So, hey, the best move is for no one to win.
Nothing more satisfying than playing as Greg Pierce, whose special ability is the ability to, they get a lot of interacts, which we'll explain at some point.
Yes,
but
yes.
Which means it's very easy for them to pick up NPCs. And nothing better than somebody's been wailing on a high-powered NPC the whole time. You roll in, pick up the NPC, instantly discard them, send them back to the NPC deck, and you're out of there. And that person just looks at you like, you've wrecked my life.
Why did you do this?
Why would you do this?
And there is this, like, this nice moment where you're like, you know, you're so powerful. You've kitted yourself up and you're like, yeah. You know, it's like, I can't really lose.
Yeah.
The only way that I could possibly mess this up is if I roll a one.
Yeah.
What's the odds of that? What's 1 in 6? Yeah. Well, what are the odds of that? And, like, you know, cock of the walk, you start rolling around, you're trying to, like, you know, clean up. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you're like, roll one. And as you're rolling one and you're failing, you're taking damage. And it means you're, like, you're dropping, like, all your beautiful items.
All your items
that you're like, well, that's good. I was so powerful, and now I'm a weak little baby boy. And, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And there's, like, you know, like Leo or Greg Pierce, who's got, like, you know, nothing in terms of health, is zipping by the ball, picking people up, throwing things down, and you're like, well,
yeah,
I feel so weak, but I'm so powerful.
Absolutely. It's great. And, you know, in those moments, you can somehow still snake the victory if you're clever and you use the board and use the items, you know, in interesting ways or whatever. Mm. But yeah, it has truly been a real experience to figure out. And it has kept coming back, I think, to that idea of, like, what's fun, though?
Yeah.
What's enjoyable to do in this game? Like, obviously, you figure out, and I think this is kind of how it worked, figure out the game. Mm. And that takes long enough, because you've got to be like, does this work? Is this a fun idea? You spend, like, you know, 3 to 4 development sessions with one particular rule or mechanic in mind. Mm. And then by the 5th, you're like, actually, that's not fun.
Mm.
And you got to get rid of it and go back and start at the beginning again or whatever. But once the game is down, and I think the game was down like 2 years ago, really.
Yeah. Something, by and large.
Yeah, by and large, we were like, oh, this is the game. Then you're like, okay, now how do you make it fun?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay, this is the game. It's done. This is how it works.
Make it the best.
But how do you make it so that every game is fun and every game is enjoyable? Yeah. And, you know, we're like finally there.
I remember like a big fear for me sometimes was the like, okay, cool. Every game, because we have a thing where it's like, you know, every game is stratagems and it's not, which is this idea of like every game is so complicated and convoluted and requires so much like explanation that you just kind of just almost get lost in that source of like,
oh yeah, absolutely. Like there's after like the second paragraph where they're explaining what you do with your wheat and you're just like, I don't know what the hell you're
so
saying to me.
6 week tokens you can trade for either
either wood or for grain, but during the winter cycle when this is flipped over you're like, I shut up.
Like my favorite one is the scythe, which is just like, the on your turn you can like do the top row action or the bottom row action. You can do either or both or none.
And you're like, what?
You're like, I don't
know
what
you mean.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
I can do either, fine. I can do both. Okay. Or none. Does that just mean I skip a turn?
Why would I do that?
Absolutely. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Which I think is very beautiful.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, there was a period of time where this was stratagems.
Yeah.
Because I think... probably also in development, there has to come that the kind of like wave of rules before you strip it back and realize what's worthwhile and what's not. But I know what you mean. I had the same fear as well, because when you'd sit people down during that period of time, you'd get those looks of like, oh, I think I get it.
Understand.
Can I do this? And you'd be like, no, sorry. And they'd be like, oh, I feel like I should be able to do that.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. But then we hit the point now where people play and they're like, oh, yeah, cool. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm across
it. Like, yeah, it's really cool. Like when you look at, say, Scythe, where you're like, what's his game? You're like, well, it's alternate reality.
Exactly.
World War I. Like, no, shush.
It's
but I always like that kind of like, I was, again, very afraid to be like, we're making this too complicated. We're making this like extremely like this thing, which is like, we're first time like,
makers
of a board game. We're making this way too complicated.
Really, yeah.
And so it was just like, okay, cool. And having those, I guess, playtesting with like, you know, people who are external to us and people who are very external, as in like we'd never met them before in our lives, and like playtesting this. And I think what really helped was like leaning into those, yeah, actually you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. Yeah.
For example, like it used to be like, so every character gets 7 movements and you get your basic 4 and then everyone has like 3 unique.
Yes.
And so the basic 4 was like forward, left, right, reverse. And so everyone on turn 1 wants to move forward and then they want to do a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for the longest time it was like, no,
sorry. Doing a thing is a turn.
Sorry, doing a thing is like an action.
Yeah.
Because again, you're leaning into, you know, D&D.
Yeah, of course,
you know, a lot of respect there. Because it's like, well, yeah, D&D has these like, you know, action economy, these turns of what you have to do and like, you know, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do this? And so it's like, well, yes. Yeah, so it's like, you know, in D&D, it's like, I want to attack twice and use my bonus action to second.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And so a lot of that kind of stuff was like, you know, kind of coming from that. So it's like, well, in your turn, you can, you know, either do this or this, but like it's all right.
Yeah. So it was,
you know, some of the car, like, you know,
move or you can interact or you can attack. And you would have
and
people.
So many people, like their very first move was always move forward. And then they wanted to do a thing.
Yeah.
And it was often pick up an item or interact with the location
or pick up an NPC.
And so it was like so much of like,
sorry,
it's just your first turn is to move forward.
Yeah.
Which is boring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's funny, it took us a bit to be like,
yeah,
actually, that sucks.
Why not? Move forward, interact. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? We'll do that. And then we're like, all of those basic movements, you move forward, you move left, you're right, and reverse. We're like, let's give them something.
Yeah, so it's like, move forward, you interact, because that's the one that everyone was doing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, because the interact, you can do a lot of it. And then it was like, okay, well then, like the left, right, reverse, whatever.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, because you wanted them to still be able to do something, but you also were like, well...
You don't want to give them too much power.
Too much of doing everything, because then it's like, what makes, say... Greg Pierce or Leo, like they're like cards that are very, you know, uniquely theirs to do those kind of things. You kind of don't want to take away from them.
Yeah,
so part of it is it's like, how can you make it fun, but also still make it unique and don't take away from over here. So you're making those characters weaker.
And there still is some element of like restriction makes a game interesting, you know, in a weird way where if you can do everything, you're not excited when you get to do something unique. So
like on that as well, is this kind of thing where it was like when you picked up a bunch of weapons or items that like helped you pass your like, you know, attack, you know, your hit check, say, or your attack check, like, cause you're rolling a 6-sided die. if you, you know, it's like, well, if I got enough and my skill check is whatever, it's like, well, how do I can't fail. I cannot possibly fail. I'm
if every
so good.
Sword I have gives me a plus one to my attack, at a certain point, there's no lose condition here.
So it's like, sweet. I don't have to roll because it's like, you know, who cares? I cannot miss.
Yeah.
And so that made us go like, yeah, that's boring.
Yeah, that's
and so
sucks.
Being able to like walk through the town and be like, I hit, I kill, yeah, I'm good.
Who cares?
We were like, no, let's make like a one a fail.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Like it's just that is kind of like very in D&D itself. And also it just helps with that RNG.
Yeah, 100%.
And helps with that like, you don't want a slot machine that pays out every time you pull it. Yeah, you want that kind of like risk.
It's funny that there's this real feeling of, what are they called? Something like something paths, and it's like you can build a walkway for people.
But
there are like, I wish I could remember the name of them.
Desire paths,
yeah, which means you can build a walkway for people, but people as like a kind of collective animal will pick a path they want to go, even if it's not the specific path that you've laid out.
So a classic example of this is you think of like a right angle, right? And so it's like a path going, you know, like down and a path going across, and you know it's the bordering a park, and like someone wants to go across, and so they just kind of do this. Everyone will do a diagonal across,
just to cut
path.
Across,
and so then they're like, okay, city council will then put a bench in the way, and so people will then go around the bench,
and so then
they'll put like say a path, like you know, like a hedge, and then you'll see people climbing over the hedge, making a move, and so it's like you can either work with it. Or you can try to
keep fighting it.
And I think we were like, let's work with it.
Yeah, absolutely. If this is what people want to do, if this is what people, you know, what would make the game fun for them, let's allow it.
And like this is, came quite late in the sort of development. We were like thinking about like, because with the NPCs, there's like hostile NPCs and friendly NPCs. And so there's like some variation of like, what's the difference here, et cetera. And towards the end, it was like, again, because we were getting to cutting rules, because it's like, is this fun? It was this idea of like, stop it, whatever. Let's just like cut this rule.
Yeah.
So like, you know, in this kind of weird instance, like, don't worry about it, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like initially picking up an NPC for a friendly, they'll trust you. They'll follow you.
Fine. Just do it for free,
for
basically.
For a hostile NPC, you had to roll a skill check to pick them up.
Yeah.
And that was like, yeah, is that fun?
Mm.
Was that kind of like, you know, we're chucking down an extra kind of thing where we're rolling?
Yeah.
It's like, it kind of slows down the gameplay a little bit. So we're like, actually, you know what? Let's nix it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, is there going to be any difference? Like, nah, whatever. You just pick someone up, it's fine. And then you could see when people were playing it, and they didn't know, like, you know, they're like, okay, cool. Well, oh, I want to pick up this hostile NPC. I want to pick them up because, so what happens?
Yeah.
You're like, nothing.
Nothing. And they're like, okay, cool.
I thought they'd want to.
Which is funny where you're like, oh, you want consequences for this. Okay. Which makes sense because, you know, in the visual language of the game, the big orcs, which are like hulking orcs, they look dangerous.
Yeah.
So in the visual language of the game, you think, I'm putting that guy in my backpack.
Yeah, he's
should hit me.
He should hit me.
He seems aggressive.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh, you know what? Fair enough.
Yeah, you can eat you. That's fine.
Yeah. So there has been a lot of that desire power thing. But then also there is the flip side of that, which is like you don't want to give people too much of what they want.
No.
You know what I mean? And so again, it's all a very delicate balance. And like in the process of making this, we've gone through so many different rules, so many different, somebody will suggest something and we'll like put it in the game. And then, you know, after a bit, we're like, actually, that was a bad idea. Take it out. Walls is a great example.
My favorite example is walls. We were playtesting this, and because it was all about like, you know, your pre-programmed movement, and someone was like, why don't you put in some walls?
Yeah.
So you can kind of have corridors. And me and you, Jackson,
we loved that
idea.
Oh my God,
so
walls,
much.
That's genius.
We were like, this is great.
You've added such a fun idea to the game.
Because,
oh my God.
It was this kind of thing because we'd been playing it for so long. Mm. We were like, we want a bit of hard mode.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted a bit of hard mode. And so this idea of like, sick, we can like make these things so you can't just leap over a wall. It makes these corridors. So if we're chasing someone,
like,
we're moving
these
things.
And it feels like you're building, because it was, you know, the idea with the walls is that you placed it at the beginning of the game.
So
you built these streets and it was like, oh, I need to get to the guardhouse or whatever, but it's down this alleyway. Mm. So I'll get down there, but then I'm trapped and I have to turn around.
Mm.
What fun.
And then
we played that for so long, and we built the whole character, like Periwinkle, because we redesigned him all around walls, and we're having a lot of fun with this, because it was like, at the very start of the game, you know, everyone places down, like, two walls, Periwinkle, because he's all wall-based guy.
He's the wall guy.
He hits three walls, and so you end up making these, like, cool little corridors, like, either, and then we started, I think, we went back to, like, we started playing it with Alex again, and Alex was like, why would I do this? Yeah. Why would I segment off a whole section?
What is the advantage for me to get here? And you're like,
but it's fun.
It's kind of to make. And you're like, and then he was like, well, maybe you can go through, or maybe you were like, maybe you can go through your own.
Yeah, he was kind of like, well, what do you think about, like, in terms of the narrative of it all? Hey, you know, you have, like, built this wall, but you know where you built it. You know a secret passage, so you can go through it.
And we even had items that helped you get over walls, like the grappling hook used to be. Use it to get over a wall. Like, we were all in.
We loved the wall. And then, like, having the ability to kind of go through the wall made it not as fun and boring. And,
well, like, you're like, well, why do I even care then, I guess? If I could go through my own wall. And then we were like, maybe you can get a thing that lets you go. And then we were like, I guess actually, don't worry about walls.
I guess the walls are fun, but only for us.
And a funny thing about that is that I think one of the reasons we were reluctant to get rid of it was that we had based so much of the game on it. Yeah. So it was like, well, if you get rid of walls, it's not just like, well, don't worry about walls. It's like, well, then we need to redesign Perry. Yeah. And we need to figure out what the grappling hook does if it doesn't let you get over a wall. Yeah. And so that makes you very reluctant to change anything. But you have to kind of accept. Yeah. And be like, you know what?
Like,
walls don't work.
Walls don't work. Because even though for us who've been playing that game for so long and for, like, you know, really into it, and, like, we were so close to it.
Yeah.
And then adding this element, which seemed to us made this, like, cool idea of, like, pathing, made the programmatic, like, you know, movement kind of work a bit. And then we were like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And then it just took one person to be like, but why? Like, why would I ever make this game harder?
Yeah.
Like, what is the advantage of putting?
Because, and then,
yeah, sure, it's all RNG, and sure, like, you take it in turns, sure. But why would you ever do that?
You're gonna end up screwing yourself over.
Like,
in
why
some
would you
capacity?
Make like box something off? And you're like, I guess for the fun.
I don't know. It's funny, but it's also one of those times where we had to come on the side of this is frustrating, not. You know, like I was saying before, some things, you know, what's that fine line between frustrating and fun?
Yeah.
And that was like, because I remember even saying, like, oh, I like it when I'm trapped down a corridor.
Yeah.
And the movement was nowhere near as complex at this point as well. And so turning around to get out of that corridor would take you a whole day.
Yeah. And like, I was loving that. And Adam was playing, I'm so frustrated and I hate this.
Yeah. He's like, I hate that I'm on this side of the wall and I can see the thing I need to get on the other side. And I'm like, yeah, but now you got to turn around. And he's like, that's not fun. And you're like, oh, okay.
Fair enough.
I guess it isn't. You know, fair. You're right. So, it's been a very funny process in that way of, like, figuring out what works, figuring out what doesn't, making something eminently playable for somebody who knows who we are, because it's like another consideration. Mm. You know, do you make a board game that is fun for D&D is for Nerds fans?
Mm-hmm.
Do you make a board game that is fun for general board game heads?
Mm-hmm.
Do you? And obviously, we tried to synthesize sort of some combination, but
yeah,
that's like a whole other consideration you got to think,
like,
about.
I think for me, it was like, okay, let's try and make this a fun game for people who just like board games, or like, you know, and then from there. For me, it was like, for people who are fans of, like, D&D is for Nerds, or just, like, I, you know, or some of the other podcasts that we do, it was like, I want to have that through, like, the quests, the narrative, like, rule book, this, like, how we can try and kind of weave that in through some of the, like, the flavor text.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Because it was, like, really trying to kind of inject our like, humor
totally.
The kind of vibe of that campaign and that Sandspans and D's for Nerds kind of into this board game. So it was like this idea of, like, if you know us and you've been listening to us and, like, following us for, you know, over 10 years, like, I get that. I understand that's kind of funny. Okay, that's kind of makes sense. And, like, if you have no idea, you're like, eh, it's funny.
Oh, yeah, I'm still having a good time. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You're like, oh, whatever. This guy's called Greg Pierce. Hurrah.
That's a funny name.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
But, you know, oh, my God, it's Greg Pierce. I'm playing as Greg Pierce. Yeah.
And so there is this kind of, like, again, fine. Yeah. Everything was just, like, you know, really threading that needle.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all right, is this too referential? Is this too silly? You know, how, you know, trying to write down, like, all the rules and, like, you know, it's like, is this too stupid?
Yes, yeah.
You want to explain the rules, but you also want to kind of make them an enjoyable read.
For sure. Yeah, totally. And it is funny that, like, you know, that, like, so one of the items that you can get, is it Or has this been changed maybe and I'm misremembering?
Sure.
Is it one of the, is it the rusty dagger does no damage?
I think the rusty dagger, it's like old daggers, like you discard it, it'll do some damage.
Yeah.
And if you have it in your items, it'll help you like,
it adds accuracy. To your, yeah.
And so it still helps you with your accuracy. Yes. But you discard it, it does zero damage. Yeah. And I think that's fine.
Exactly. And I love that it's still like, you can discard it for zero damage.
Yeah.
That's an option. And so, you know, I think even though some of that sort of stupid stuff we have, you know, not had to remove, but we've maybe removed to make for a, like a better game. Stuff like walls where we're like, it's fun to suffer.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, it's not.
You're like, why would, you know, because you can imagine somebody coming here being like, why even write it down if you can't use it? You're like, oh, it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny to do, you know. But then on the, you know, on the flip side, there's stuff that we, you know, have gotten rid of that's kind of the same thing. Like, I don't think this is in the game anymore, but you used to be able to, there was a period of time where we were like, what if you could throw every item for one damage? Every item could be discarded. Because it's funny to imagine somebody throwing, say, a box of chocolates, which is one of the items, at an NPC to do damage.
Well, it's just throwing an NPC.
Yeah, exactly. Throwing an NPC. You want to throw Urky Timbers at fucking Pop a Little O to hurt him? You can do that. But then we were like, oh, you know what? That's so much text. That's so much for what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a, it has been that really funny experience of... you know, and that's, I think, just development of anything and going like, into it. And
yeah, like I get, I'm like, oh, and like, I really want to start like launching into like from there, like a bunch of the, you know, the playable characters and like the, how the NPCs have changed over time. And but honestly, we can save that
yeah,
for
exactly.
another episode.
Yeah.
Because again, we have been, this is kind of like, has it like consumed us for almost a decade.
Oh, that's pretty much. Yeah.
And so there's a lot to talk about. And there's like a lot I want to talk about as well. And I really could just keep going
on. Oh, absolutely. We could do every episode now in just one big 14, 15 hour, you know, whatever marathon. But
we should stop ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, we should. We should be clever.
So if you haven't by now, please head on over to the Kickstarter and follow us along. We are aiming for, I think, 1,000 followers and from next door, and we're working with somebody, like another, like a group, a team who is like, they have done a bunch of other Kickstarters before, because once again, we're like, hey, we baby.
How we do this? Yeah.
We don't know.
What happening?
Help.
Yeah.
And so like, okay. And so they're very much like, yep, we've done many board games before. Sure. Well, it will help you out. And they're like, okay, cool. If you get to 1,000 followers from there, it's like, sweet. We'll launch in a month. So it's like, hey, we're very close to that. So if you guys head on over
close,
to the Kickstarter, the links will be in the show notes. Just give us a cheeky follow. And hopefully then from that, we'll then be able to be like, hey, hopefully next week, when we sit down to record this, we'll be like,
do
hey,
another
guys,
one.
It's going to be,
it's going to come out in a month.
Date.
Yeah, exactly.
Here is the date.
Oh, that'll be so crazy.
Because it's actually really exciting. So please follow us along on the Kickstarter. And if you want, head over to the Jaren's Outpost website, where you can check out some blogs. This will, hey, give me
the kick up the butt
that I need to go to those draft publish. Because again, it's this kind of thing to be like, I don't know, we've done this thing, I am proud of it, but I don't know, Australia has this weird thing of like tall poppy syndrome, and I guess that's like everywhere has tall poppy syndrome, where you're like, I did this thing, I'm proud of it.
I don't know, I'm proud of it, but that's embarrassing, kind of I'm sorry.
Embarrassing, but like, hey, here it is.
Here it is, it's pretty
fun,
cool. Do you want to play
it's
it?
It's pretty cool.
We worked really hard on it.
It's very pretty, it's like real cool. Like,
you know, seeing it, you know, like
getting that, we got a prototype, and we got like, it sounds nice to like feel it.
It feels how heavy it is, how weighty it is, it's really cool. But if that's stupid and we're stupid,
know.
That's okay. I'm sorry for even bringing it up. I've embarrassed myself.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. 100%. So yeah, please, hey, head to the Jaren's Outpost website. Head to the Kickstarter.
And yeah, so from there you can also like check out like some of the artwork, the characters. There is a tabletop sim link to, I think actually an old version. So, hopefully by the time this comes out, that'll have been updated.
Yes.
With the new version.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of even like, you know, have a play.
Get a hands on sort of feel for it.
Because again, it's a lot of fun. We really like it. We're proud of this. There's so many times of this development where I kind of like stare off into the middle distance and I'm like, what if we had just reskinned werewolves?
Yo,
like,
dude.
Damn, that would
that would have been clever. But we wouldn't have gotten the final product that we have.
Which is, again, and I really hope those who play it take enjoy away and we enjoy it.
Yeah.
But like, you know, have those little emergent stories.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Absolutely.
Where they're like, yeah, this was so cool. Like it was like me and like my mate, we were going head and head. We were trying to fight the surgeon.
Yeah.
Like, we were taking blow after blow. He missed and he's like, ah, shit.
Yeah.
And then I was about to like, you know, I was going to get the next turn, but no one was paying attention.
Yeah. To
like,
you know,
Gary. And Gary just comes in there with a goddamn dagger, yeah, throws it and he's dead. And absolutely, he gets like 3 victory points. Yeah. And they, oh, there.
Dave was going to win. Because he was about to drop off Laura Fillmore to the restaurant. But I just realized that I happened in my last turn to be on the sure foot home for wayward children, which meant that with a skill check, I could steal Laura Fillmore off her.
And then I could, you know, go over there and
then
do it.
I was right near, you know, like those are the kinds of stories that you get out of it every time you play. And we still enjoy it every time we play it too. And we've been playing it for nearly 10 years. So that's got to be a good sign.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I've been Jackson Bailey.
I've been Joel Zammit.
We'll see you again next week. Bye.
Eric.